Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Consolog, episode number 77. Lucky number sevens. If you're playing craps, I think that's a thing that I played craps the first time a couple months ago, and I don't remember if seven and seven is good or not. But if you are a craps player that's gambling for you, then please let me know on the internet. I am joined here, as always, with my faithful co-host, Matthew Gerstmann. How is it hanging, Matthew Gerstmann?
I am doing fantastic, Harry. I am so excited to be here, as always, and I am even more excited about our next guest. Yes, our current guest is my imaginary friend. His name is, what is the name of my imaginary friend, Harry? I didn't think this far into the bet.
I'm going to say Rupert Murdoch.
No, I don't like him.
Well, he's still imaginary. He can be the non-real Rupert Murdoch, but that's just the first name that came to my mind for some reason that I have no idea why.
Okay, sure.
This episode is a big episode. There is so much that I'm excited to talk about this episode.
That's why we needed an imaginary host to help out.
Fine. The imaginary host is Matilda Garwinkle. I think that's your same initials, which is very weird. I think that's your alter ego, Matilda Garwinkle.
If I was a girl, I would have been named Stephanie.
That's also another imaginary co-host, Stephanie Stephanopoulos.
Yes, our imaginary co-host, Stephanie Stephanopoulos. We are thrilled to have you here to help us with this giant episode. But first, we have some show notes, Harry.
Yeah, your show notes is first.
Yeah, I guess my show note is first, so I will share it. I found out that I will be speaking at another conference, but I can't tell you which one because they haven't announced it yet. But anyway, pay attention to the Twitters because that's coming soon. I am excited. Harry, what else did we do recently?
Man, we had the first successful hosting of our new meetup in New York City called Use React NYC, and I am declaring it a rousing success.
I would call it that.
We had around 120 RSVPs, many more on the wait list, and I think around 70 plus people showed up, which for the first meetup is stupendous.
Yeah, we are thrilled with that. I had a talk that went really well.
Your talk was great.
Jen's talk was great.
So good.
And then get this. Harry managed to find us a bar to go afterwards that we walked into with 12 people.
And had seats for you to sit in.
I was very impressed.
That was the high mark of my career right there.
It should be. I don't know what else you've accomplished.
I'm retiring this month. I'm going to go live in a farm upstate, yeah. Speaking of my cows and horses.
Speaking of Use React, we would like to share that the Use React Slack is also now the official home of the the console log community. Yes, we are the conference log. We now are a podcast about conferences and nothing else.
I mean, we're not too far from that. All your traveling this year, you're a road warrior everywhere.
Dude, no, I'm going on tour. It's going to be great.
It's the Matthew. Anyway, yeah.
The home of the console log community is now on the Use React Slack. So if you go to usereact.nyc, even if you are not in NYC, you can sign up to join our Slack and then go to the console log channel. And that is where me and Harry will be chatting all day when we should be doing our jobs.
We are there 24/7, 365, 366 on a leap year. We got these date ranges down pat. We're using Moment.js. We know how to tell time. Come on down. The weather's fine. The room's warm. And our jokes are still bad.
Yeah. Also, I go to sleep. I don't know about Harry. Harry's a child. He's with child. He doesn't sleep.
I don't sleep. What's sleep? Sleep is for those who can do it. I forgot how.
Anyway, the other thing to note is if you want to give us money, our Patreon is kicking. We have so many patrons that we are so grateful for. So anyway, hook us up with that moolah so we can afford to pay the bill for the new service we use for this dope audio quality.
Yeah, this is our hat in hand saying, please, sir, I want some more. That was a Broadway reference, Matthew. I thought you'd get that one.
Oh, I did, but Isn't that based on a book?
I don't know, but you know what this show's based on? The news! Let's get to it! All right, the big, 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 big. So big, I have to say it. How many times did I say big? Three times? Three bigs. Big news this week out of GitHub. Of course, you know what I'm talking
this
about.
This is huge. I am so excited about this.
Biggest news this week, this side of Kentucky. You can now, on a pull request, subscribe only to issue closures or pull request merge notifications. Boom!
It's true. Fewer emails from GitHub. That is the big GitHub announcement.
You can now change your notification settings in a PR. Wickety split. Wickety wicky wah. Wackety wackety woo. No, of course we're joking. The big news this week is GitHub announced the release of the GitHub Package Registry. Holy bananas. If I was a farmer and I had bananas, they'd be holy indeed. What this was, so let me fill you in case you are not aware of this news item because it is new. GitHub this past week announced that not only will they now be hosting your code via Git repos, you will now be able to publish packages to GitHub as well. Fresh off the bat, they're supporting, they are now compliant with registries for different languages. From starters, they're supporting NPM, Docker, Maven, NuGet, and RubyGems, which is just, it means that you can use the existing CLIs, existing tooling, and configure it to point to this new GitHub package registry, and then just have GitHub serve your packages.
This is very convenient timing with all of the drama surrounding another package hosting company. Although I don't actually think one has anything to do with the other, because this would have taken way too long to build.
No, this is some serendipity that if you were Mary Poppins, you put some spoonful of sugar in that, it helps the medicine go down real nice. I'm sorry.
Oh my, I can't even imagine. Can you imagine being on the team working on the GitHub package registry and seeing all the drama go down with NPM and just being like, oh, I have a surprise for you, Twitter.
Just you wait. Just you wait.
We should ask Tierney how he felt. Like that, like...
I mean, to be fair, I don't wish any will on any GitHub package registry, but I think what this does, again, bring up is that, you know, this is now, again, another for-profit company that is doing something for the community. But I did see, you know, there was still an urge that I saw some people express on Twitter that would it be better if there was a community-ran and maintained package registry, which is an interesting idea, but I don't know if that's, I don't know if it's really tenable. Like, these things cost a lot of money to put together and to host. And not only the bandwidth is the biggest cost, by and large.
Yeah, the bandwidth is huge. So it's a little, it's good right now, all the work Microsoft is doing. Microsoft is doing incredible work at the moment.
To be clear, GitHub is owned by Microsoft, just to give context.
Yes, sorry, to give context, GitHub was acquired by Microsoft 2 years ago, something like that.
It's pretty recent.
Anyway, so Microsoft is doing incredible work in the open source space. They have VS Code, they have GitHub, they have TypeScript. They were also behind C# and lots of other things in the past. So
crushing the
Microsoft is doing a really good job in this space, something I never thought I would say many years ago. But it is concerning that it's all under one company. And, you know, what happens if they give Microsoft back to Ballmer? Like that... he's going to have his developers, but I don't know if they're going to have him.
Well, there'll be packages. They'll be the new FedEx company. I mean, so on one hand, I can understand that there is the desire to have, you know, code is free, the open source movement. You want to make sure that things are just freely accessible for everybody. You want to have it be maintained and owned by the community at large. But on the other hand, most people write code professionally. Like, yes, we have open source, but most code done is done in a professional setting where real money is being spent. So to have there be a company willing to accept money to host such a sensitive part of my tool chain for my job does also give me some confidence in the matter too. I'm not going to worry about Microsoft or GitHub going out of business anytime soon, which is not as true for NPM, sadly, as much as I do love all the work they've done over the years. Troubles notwithstanding, but
Also, these companies aren't profitable, so the burn rate is questionable, yeah. Where the burn rate being the amount of money they have left before they have to fundraise more,
right.
or not survive. And a lot of these companies that are doing, like, all the things that feel kind of small and the underdog are still for profit. They're just not as successfully for profit as Microsoft. So like Travis CI and Circle CI, all these things that are great for the open source community are still for profit companies, especially when you want to use it privately. And that's how they pay their bills.
Yeah. You either live long enough to see yourself. What is the expression? Either die a hero
or live long enough to see yourself become a villain,
which is true for companies. Like you'll see it repeat all the time. It's like, Microsoft is one of those companies that has lived long enough to then be reborn the hero again. What is old is new. What is new is old.
We always come back to that. And, you know, we were just talking about, Harry, we were talking about startup fundraising, and I think there's some news around that.
Yeah. I mean, I would go on and on. I could make a whole episode just about the GitHub package stuff. But yeah, definitely should go on to talk about companies also trying to be for profit. The very beloved in the coding community, at least the Twitter areas that I traffic, Code Sandbox is this wonderful website that I use all the time that allows you to have essentially an entirely in-browser experience for making applications. They've actually been able to port VS Code into the browser and have this experience where you can actually create an entire application without ever having to leave the browser. It's been, I guess, bootstrapped until now. There's paying plans that you can use, but this past week, they announced that they've actually raised VC funding, $2.4 million.
That's a huge seed funding as well.
Yeah. Usually it's in the hundreds of thousands range. This is big.
Seed funding is traditionally in the hundreds of thousands. This is coming from Kleiner Perkins, who are a major VC firm that are huge in the industry. The thing about Code Sandbox is the founder, his name is Ives Van Horn. He built this out of his college dorm. He is, I can't imagine he's much older than 21. He's a young guy. So I wish him the best of luck with that. He is running a company now, so good for him.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting to see how this now lets them hire more people and just grow and attack things. I think a good friend of ours, Sarah, was recently joined the company as well that has been adding great features day in, day out. So, yes, you can only throw so many people at a problem, but if you actually get a team behind a product, then you can definitely make it grow in a much faster way.
Yeah, so good for Code Sandbox. I'm super excited to see how they grow. They are doing super cool stuff.
And not to be too much of a downer, because the next news is also exciting, but it's definitely, competition is healthy. It's very easy to forget that because there's that fear that kicks in, but having choices and having things compete usually ends up producing better products all around. So this past week, we're going to now delve into Microsoft and Google both had their developer conferences this past week. It was Microsoft Build and Google I/O, and a lot of news came out from these past 2 weeks because typically you want to save big news items for those weeks. I myself at MongoDB are gearing up for MongoDB World in June, so that's always a exciting time in a company's life.
I gotta say, trying to compete on, so you can compete on a lot of things, but competing on product launches is not fun because it's a news cycle you gotta win.
Oh yeah, there's only so many hours in the day and so many years that you can reach before people just kind of go to sleep, unlike me. So at Microsoft Build, they had some big news items for VS Code and the Visual Studio suite of products. And there's this blog post that came out talking about those new features. I'm going to talk about two of them from this article. One is that they announced Visual Studio Live Share, which enables you to essentially have a remote server host some version of VS Code, like some server host, and then you on your laptop can take your VS Code also or Visual Studio and connect to that remote instance and load up that entire environment, which means it's kind of like a shell of VS Code where you have all that state, all that code hosted remotely, where it's very much like a terminal that you're plugging into and you're able to just kind of access multiple instances there. But what's even more exciting building on top of that feature is what Microsoft announced is that they are now creating a browser-based web companion for VS Code. It's still in beta, still not fully out yet, but this is going to be very much like Code Sandbox, except backed by Microsoft. So
see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, competition, as I preface this, is healthy. I mean, there is an advantage Code Sandbox has because their entire world is just this thing, whereas this is just one feature of a suite of things. So it'll definitely
be a while. Am I wrong, Harry? I believe it was Ives, the founder of Code Sandbox, who managed to get VS Code running in the browser.
He was indeed. I would be surprised if, I mean, it's open source, so I can only imagine that they leveraged that knowledge, which is the double-edged sword of coding in the open.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that are now in the open, Microsoft surprised the world a couple of months ago when they announced that they were no longer going to be working on the Edge browser and instead adopt Chromium as their base for their next generation web browser. And this past week, there was a very fun read that was published by The Verge entitled Inside Microsoft's Surprise Decision to Work with Google on its Edge Browser. And it's a very entertaining behind-the-scenes read about the process that went into place to decide to make this huge pivot. And it talks about the teams coming together to figure out why they weren't getting as much adoption with Microsoft Edge, what was the things that was causing them to create that adoption, how could they resolve this issue, and what finally pushed them over the edge to decide to switch to Chromium. Very entertaining read. If you do enjoy these types of behind the desktop point of view, I would definitely encourage you to read it. The latter part of the article also talks about how the Microsoft Chromium developers are now working with the Google Chromium developers in the open source project, which is weird because those companies compete, but they also collaborate. A fun outcome too is that Microsoft has a lot of touch-based products, but historically Chromium has not had very good touch-based support. So the Microsoft developers were like, hey, we want to improve this. Can we work on it? And the Google engineers were like, yes, please. We've wanted to do this for a while, but it kept getting backlogged. You couldn't actually work on it. And that's kind of a great example of where when two companies can work on the same product, everybody benefits from that. Very entertaining read. I would definitely encourage you to read it.
This whole thing is so interesting. One of my favorite things was immediately after the news came out, the number of former Microsoft employees who were tweeting that they wanted a reevaluation of their performance review from several years ago when they were pushing for this to happen, because I'm sure that people have tried to push for this to happen over and over and over again at Microsoft. That's funny. Yeah, so that was particularly funny. I think it's interesting. I sent a Slack message to the person in charge of QA for my area, and I said to her, I regret to inform you that we need to start testing on Edge for Mac.
That's a good troll.
I was really sad about that. So anyway, the touch support thing is interesting. Yeah, I would be shocked if they managed to beat Apple on touch support. I'm actually, funnily enough, Safari is my primary browser. So which is a surprise to people. But I really just, I like the Zoom. I like the Zoom so much and the interface so much that I use Safari over Chrome for my primary usage. Granted, I have both browsers open at most times. The other thing I want to mention is it is not uncommon at all for companies to both compete and collaborate. We see this all the time. Apple and Facebook are consistent players in this space as well. We see, you know, Apple buying displays from Samsung but competing on the Android front. We see Apple buying search from Google but competing on the same front. You see a lot of that. You see Sony building Windows machines but shipping the PlayStation. So it's not at all uncommon for this to happen, but it's kind of always good when they work together.
And then we as consumers benefit. So good. And last Microsoft news is that today...
I am so excited about this particular piece of Microsoft news. I think this is so underrated. The only thing I'm sad about is it's Windows, not Mac. But they are pulling off a coup here that I think is incredible.
Well, what's weird about this to me is that if you've ever played around with, so this past week, Microsoft announced that they have made a Windows target for React Native, which means that you can write React Native and not just compile it for iOS and Android, but you can now also build it for Windows. And what's funny to me about this article is that they released it as news. This has already existed for a year or so. I guess this is them like making it official, but I'm dying for something equivalent on Apple so I can easily make a non-Electron native app. There are community-powered pieces of tech that does that, but there's always gotchas. But Microsoft is putting a lot of – speaking of joining with your competitors, Microsoft working with Facebook. Microsoft is – doesn't care, whatever helps them, if it might help somebody else, they are okay with that, which is a very, very...
Also, this is the first React platform that is maintained by someone other than Facebook, which is why I referred to it as a coup. The other thing is, so for years and years, and when I say years and years, I mean since the 80s, Microsoft and Apple have been competing on attracting developers to build for their platform. That's a thing they've been competing for since the beginning of time. And what I think is so funny is the number of complaints about the walled garden that Apple builds, they still tend to attract higher quality developers. macOS apps tend to be better than Windows-based apps. But this is a huge shift. I think React Native for Windows is going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what that means. Especially if you make developers' lives easier and happier, they're going to go there. People are already mad at
I don't see Apple ever doing this.
Not this version, no. I mean, they're doing something that's rumored for Apple's tech conference later this year where they're going to have their Marzipan product, but that's targeted to...
Well, I think iOS apps on macOS will be very interesting as well.
Yeah. Speaking of making developers happy, we're going to switch to the world of Google I.O.
Speaking of things being portable, I think that's the real transition, Harry.
Yeah, we're not talking too much about Google I.O. because it was very developer-focused, mostly just education things they talked about. There were a few news items that we're going to say, but the first one is just, so they announced, let's go back a little bit. So Google, back in the day, which is probably like 2-4 years ago, who can tell time, announced a new language called Dart, and it didn't really do that well because they did a bad job of marketing it when it was released. Dart was kind of a derivative of JavaScript, similar to TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. Dart's kind of a superset cousin. Like, it's not exactly a superset, but it's definitely closer
to, say, ReasonML or CoffeeScript than TypeScript.
In terms of derivatives, yes. And so lets you write applications. They've made frameworks for it. One of the frameworks they've made is this one called Flutter. Flutter has been designed to essentially be Google's answer to React Native, as is the easiest way to explain it, where you can use the Dart language and use the Flutter framework to easily create iOS and Android applications. At Google I.O. this past week, they announced that they are now adding support for the web and the desktop, which means that you can make a Flutter application and set its target to the web. It'll then make a web application. I was able to find a example of one of these web-based applications that they made, and my one word summary of it is barf. I should have sent this to you earlier.
So you're telling me you like it.
Oh, it's the best thing ever. So it definitely leans into Google's love of custom elements, where if you look in the inspect in the developer tools, you'll see all these FLT, standing for Flutter, Dash, Ruler, Host, all these things. But if you actually get down to where the actual UI is being displayed, and you try to actually see like the divs and spans that are there, you know what you see instead? A canvas element.
That's what I want.
You know, really accessible, really easy to leverage all the existing technologies of the browser. A canvas element.
I want the actual code running to map as little as possible to the code I've written.
Oh my God, there's text that I can't select and copy because it's a canvas element.
You know,
what the fuck?
At least they can do all those nifty canvas effects. I don't know what those are, but they can do it. They can rasterize the whole page to a PNG. They could do that.
I mean, they can also barf. Just barf.
They could dart. Darth?
I mean, good intentions, but like the movie was better. How's that joke? That was good.
All right. I think the book was better than the movie, but I got
it. Oh, man. We're taking it way back. All right. I don't want to talk too much more about it because,
let's talk about something good and really interesting that Google did. This is our next piece of news. They shipped an evergreen Googlebot. So what is Googlebot? Googlebot is the crawler that visits web pages that includes them in Google search. So what happens is Google will run your website in a headless browser and then use that as part of its ranking algorithm or to extract metadata or whatever. And they completely rewrote the thing. They called it Evergreen. So it's using the latest Chromium engine. And as a result of this, it's going to have all of the newest JavaScript features and all of the newest performance features. So they are going, I imagine that Google results are going to change dramatically. A lot of SEO things are going to shift because they can test how performant your website is based on these new features.
Yeah, so who needs server-side rendering ever again? At least for SEO purposes.
Right, very exciting. That was one of the big reasons you server-side rendered because, I mean, server-side rendering is just like a solution that that seems good, but it's real. No one seems invested enough in it. I think the entire industry on server-side rendering is just like, we're pretty sure this is going to work, but we haven't figured out that it's going to yet. And it keeps not being good enough.
Yeah, it is exciting news. But yeah, you know.
Although one cool thing I have to say about server-side rendering is Harry and I once worked on an application that was server-side rendered, and very occasionally, for some reason, our build would break in such a way that the server-side rendering would work, but the client-side JavaScript would not work. And
I remember this.
You remember what I'm talking about now. And yeah. It was really interesting because our site was, we were proud of this. It was so well built that the server-side rendering would produce a mostly working website that until you tried to buy the product, you didn't know the website was broken.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because if we could collect money with just SSR, that would be amazing. No JavaScript.
Oh, yeah. I remember that happened. I was just like, oh, wow. Wait, there's no JavaScript here? Wow. Yeah.
Literally, the noticeable feature at the beginning was that the carousel was broken.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was amazing. Last bit of Google news this past week, which is not directly Google news, but there was ngConf, what happened a couple weeks ago. And it is the world's largest Angular conference, not run by Google, which is important. It's community run. And there is this wonderful blog post written at Auth0 giving kind of the summary of what happened at ngConf. They titled it The State of Angular. I like to keep my awareness of what's going on in the JavaScript ecosystem at large. So this is why we are talking about this, because even if you do mostly play with React or other frameworks, it is good to be exposed to things that are there because you do learn from them. Some of the highlights from this blog post that I found very interesting, learning about where Angular is nowadays, they've been working on Angular 8. And some of the most exciting features that I found is they're adding support. This is one. There's so many, but one of the ones that I found most interesting was that they're trying to add support for Bazel in Angular. At work, we're trying to actually move towards Bazel. I know Dropbox uses Bazel a lot. It's kind of, I can understand the desire because Google internally uses their own internal build tool called Blaze, which is a version of Bazel or vice versa.
Bazel is the open source version of Blaze, which is what Google uses internally as their build.
But imagine, so right now it'll be an opt-in and they're working on it. But imagine you making a create Angular app. And this is me being really naive, so maybe this isn't the case at all. But imagine you just doing like create Angular app and then you have to install Bazel to do that, which seems weird.
That seems like a lot. Yeah, I agree. That seems like a lot. For the user. So the real advantage of Bazel when you're at a big company is you can have 100% reproducible builds, which at a certain scale is absolutely necessary. So when I go into my dev environment, I can type Bazel start or, you know, the exact command. Actually, I have an alias for it that just like says like, give me a server. And it just like runs whatever I need. But anyway, so when I do that, I know that my dev box will end up in a state where it is running the server properly. There isn't anything that hasn't been built. There isn't anything that's out of sync. The repo is totally built and I can just start doing development. And it does take a little longer. And my single biggest issue that I really wish someone would solve is nobody has really done a good job of doing JavaScript rules for Bazel. So Bazel is a build system. And if you remember the days of Grunt or Gulp, you had to write like actual tasks for Grunt and Gulp to run. And Bazel is similar in that it has rules, which are effectively tasks that it needs to run. And no one's really done a good job of integrating Bazel with Webpack or really any of the modern JavaScript toolchain. Anyway, that's one of the big problems that I'd like to see solved. But maybe that'll happen as a result of Angular. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope it's. I can only imagine it being an opt-in just so they have parity, but not a default, which would be nice. The other big item that they've been working on for a while, one that I find most interesting, is they're working on an entirely new renderer for Angular. So you write your UI code, you write it all in templates, and they're actually rewriting the entire engine that renders those templates. And in many ways, it reminds me of the functionality that Vue.js might already have, in the sense that the new Ivy renderer will support tree shaking, template debugging, and smaller bundle sizes. Effectively, they're making it be completely backwards compatible, no breaking behavior at all. They're not done yet because they still have a few, they're 97% at parity with all tests being passed. But when it comes out, I think it's going to be a huge, I mean, just as a user on the internet who I know I use websites that use Angular, the fact that this will be in there by default, making these websites more performant for my own use cases, is exciting for me.
The rewrite of the templating engine kind of reminds me of the transition from React 15 to React 16, where it was an API compatible rewrite.
Very true. Yeah, and the blog post is very long. Definitely encourage you to read about it if you do have an interest to talk about support for custom elements with Angular, better support for forms, state management. But yeah, definitely take a look if you are interested, because it always is good to be aware of things outside of your own daily workflow. And with that, it brings us to the last bit of news this past week, one that we wanted to end a fun one on. Matthew, you want to talk about it?
I am just so happy for one of the best people in the React community, Dan Abramov, is working on a new generation of React hot reloading. And first of all, I am thrilled that this is going to work with hooks and that it is going to be revamped for React Native. But what I am honestly the happiest about is I know that hot reloading is Dan's passion project, and I am just so excited that he gets to work on his favorite thing.
So kind of you. It'll be interesting when we get that in our hands. Definitely some new problems to solve in the space of React nowadays. I think the most interesting thing from that tweet thread that he was talking about is that to make this work successfully will require some modifications to React Core itself, which made me chuckle because he now has the power to do that.
That is very true.
And with that, it brings us to everyone's favorite segment of the episode, which is Matthew's jokes. This is the part where Matthew tells jokes. Matthew, what jokes do you have for us today?
First of all, I have some fantastic news. Our friend Jeremy, who recently purchased a house. By the way, congratulations to Jeremy on purchasing a house.
Congratulations. House buying is hard.
Is almost done with his basement. And when Jeremy is done with his basement, he is going to record a version of the Matthew's Jokes theme song, which we will then use in our episodes. And he has also agreed that if we ever do a live episode, which is not a guarantee, he will sing it live.
That's why I was trying a new rendition, so that he has some more source material to play with.
Yeah. By the way, for our biggest fans, we are going to continue the new tradition. This is officially a tradition. We will now do this from now on. I have decided. Well, we're going to keep doing this. So if you tweet us your favorite thing about the movie When Harry Met Sally, which happens to be my favorite movie, which is
tradition. This is the first time this is happening.
No. Last time was Cowabunga and Bermuda.
Oh, that's true.
So anyway, tweet us anything from the movie When Harry Met Sally, and we will know that you are one of our biggest fans, and we appreciate you. And with that, I will...
Or if you buy Matthew and I a Reuben sandwich from Katz's, we'll also be your biggest fan.
I love Katz Deli, but they make a terrible Reuben. I know. Their Russian dressing is atrocious. That is not what you go to Katz Deli for.
Wow. Things I learned today. Not only just JavaScript news.
Anyway, so I have a good friend who listens to this podcast. So maybe he will hear. His name is Bleep. But anyway, he is working
live. That was well done.
Thank you. He is working on kind of a, I would almost call it a book on how to get up and running as a front end engineer. It's a very opinionated guide that has literally everything you need to know. And it's really fantastic. And he asked me to review it. So I don't know. I have no idea when this thing will ship. But anyway, there is a picture in here that is a kind of early 2000s style meme that says version control. And then below it, it says, Git gets easier once you get the basic idea that branches are homeomorphic endofunctors mapping submanifolds of a Hilbert space. And I started laughing hysterically at my desk, not because I understood this sentence, but because it made fun of lambda calculus and just general functional programming nonsense. So anyway, I'd
actually laugh more if you were laughing to yourself, being like, I too have thought these things.
So anyway, in honor of my friend Bleep, I am going to tell Git jokes today. So that is what we are going to.
That was the joke. Okay, keep going.
That wasn't the joke. I'm going to tell 3 Git jokes now.
We'll get to it.
So
first one, you got it.
Yeah, hold on. I'm looking at the giant list of jokes, and I'm trying to decide which ones I want to tell. I did not come up with these.
We'll just do a Git reset hard, and you'll be fine.
Okay, you know what, Harry? You can check it anytime you like, but you can never diff.
Check me out tonight. I don't want to bisect my coat till I see the light. All right, sorry.
That was the first joke.
Which one?
Oh, okay, fine. You didn't get it. I'll just tell another one.
I actually just was waiting to talk. I'm so sorry.
Hold on.
Wait, can you say it again now? Wait, just repeat it. Now I'm actually curious what happened.
You know what, Harry? If you have anything staged, commit now or stash forever.
Oh, I got it. Okay. Now I listened. I wasn't listening before. I'm so sorry.
Well, you know what they say, a Git pull away keeps the conflicts away.
Not always true, but I'll give it to you.
Okay, fine. And then Git SVN, now you have 2 problems.
You laughed through that. You have to say that again.
Fine. I kissed a Git and I liked it. I hope my repo don't mind it.
Did you make that one up?
No, I read it.
You wrote it?
No, I read it. These are on a Git repo I found called EugeneK/GitJokes.
Oh, man. I don't know if those were jokes as much as observations, but I guess that is jokes. Jokes are observations. I've observed this too. All right, well, that was Matthew's jokes. Not sure it was the best ones. I think I like the preamble more than the actual joke telling itself. But there you go, folks.
In case of fire, Git commit, Git push, leave the building.
That is true. I Git revert all my worries away. Wow. So yeah, that was your episode of Console Log, episode number 77.
That was a lot of sevens for this episode. That was an intense 77th episode.
Yeah, they call me old Snake Eyes. Wait, that's 2 ones. Shit.
No one calls you Snake Eyes, Harry.
They did back in middle school. That's when I had a pet cobra. I named him Timothy.
Who called you that in middle school?
It might have been myself. I was probably looking at myself in the mirror and I said, hey, Snake Eyes.
I ported about 150 emoji to the Use React Slack, which includes several Harry emoji. So there is the party Harry. There's like a derp Harry. There's like 12 different Harry emoji.
Wait, there's a derp Harry? I haven't even seen that one.
I ported over quite a few.
There's a derp Harry. It's just Harry. Are you calling that one the derp Harry?
No, there's another one. There's another one in there that I saw. I literally was sitting. This is what I was doing before we started recording. I was sitting here editing a bash script that was out of date because it downloaded Slack emojis from other Slacks, but the last time it was updated, the API was different. So anyway, I was changing that, and then I downloaded all the emoji and ported them over. So anyway, we have Party Harry and Party Matthew, and we also have an emoji. We also have an emoji called Matthew, not Matt, because I strongly prefer to be called Matthew.
I strongly prefer to be called often.
Yeah, ConsoleLog fans, big ConsoleLog fans, here's my request for you. Whenever anyone on the internet calls me Matt, correct them and tell them it's Matthew. I will be so appreciative, you don't even know.
I see no derp, Harry. I see none of it. Get my hopes okay. up.
I can't remember what this emoji was.
We'll do it later. That's the episode, folks. Hopefully you enjoyed it. We always love to hear from you on Twitter, so definitely at message us. Let us know. If you want to talk to us in real time, join the UseReact Slack channel. You can go to UseReact.nyc to put in your email address to get an invite to the Slack channel. We will be there. If you say hello, we will say hello, just like that.
What will actually probably happen is we'll send a wave and then we'll go back to whatever we were doing because Harry and I both have day jobs.
Nah, but you know, you all are more important than life itself.
Listeners, I love you. I think you're wonderful. I do not think you are more important than life itself.
You know what? There's only so much time in the day that I can spend away from talking throughout the day. So that's how I'm going to say I'm going to end the day. Such a bad ending. All right.
That was a terrible ending. We need something better than that, Harry.
No, we're just going to end on that sour note, just like a lemon that I bit into about 20 minutes ago.
Anyway, tweet us about the movie When Harry Met Sally if you got this far. We love you. Bye.